Today we would be talking about most interesting guy. Today our story would be taking us to Alaska, where when you commit a crime or you have some embarrassing situation, you would talk about going to Alaska and start your life afresh. Well, this guy started his life very fresh in Alaska. And this guy is popular for two things that most of the girls would go crazy for. He loves to bake and butcher. So, without any delay, we'll get into the story. Alaska, the most remote part of United States of America. So much uninhabited land, in total area, it's twice the size of Texas. With over 375 million acres, it's bigger than Texas, California, and Montana combined. It has less people living there than North Dakota, and just slightly more than Vermont. You can really get away from people in Alaska. So many places where you can find yourself with nobody else around for miles and miles and miles. And Alaska resident Robert Hansen, an Anchorage-based baker, chose to use this uninhabited remoteness to his raping and murderous advantage for over a decade. In the late 1970s, Anchorage police began receiving steady reports about missing prostitutes and topless dancers. Initially, these disappearances caused little concern, as such girls were notorious for living at the moment's notice, usually without telling anyone where they were going, but their bodies began to be found. And soon, Alaskan people knew they had a serial killer in their midst. We took a look at Alaska, America's 49th state, and its most notorious serial killer, Robert Hansen, aka Butcher Baker. You are listening to Crime with K. Today we are up with again another bizarre and exciting episode which would make you go from what to what. So hang on and get cozy. This is one hell of a ride. To set the atmosphere, Robert Hansen was a serial rapist with at least 30 victims that survived and a minimum of 17 who were raped and murdered. Hansen, like too many others, was a serial killer who got away with serial killings because he didn't come across like a serial killer to people around him. He seemed like a nice family man, donut baker, who makes delicious chocolate cake donuts and hunts women in woods. In a perfect world, no one in this world, at least Robert Hansen, has done that. Hansen was an award-winning hunter who put his hunting skills to use on human beings. He was also a successful bakery owner. So weird. Local police buying donuts made by the guy, they are thinking about how much they are gonna catch while they're eating them. February 15, 1939, the day after Valentine's Day, a baby boy is born in Estevill Lovas Coleman Hospital. This baby will grow up to be a man who will not become some romantic lover. Maybe he would have been romantic if he was born one day earlier. Maybe that would have fixed everything. Maybe Cupid could have softened him. Probably not. This baby is Robert Christian Hansen. He is born to a Danish immigrant baker named Christian Hansen and his wife Edna. And he'll soon become an insecure, troubled, angry monster. Jobs were scarce in Estherville, a quaint little town of roughly 6,000 people, a town most famous for a 455-pound meteorite that fell to earth a few miles north of town in 1879. In 1942, when Robert was 3, his family headed west. They moved to Richmond, California, just north of San Francisco, on the San Francisco Bay, where they would live for 5 years. And in Richmond, Christian and Edna would quickly tire of the hustle and grind of trying to pound out a living in a much more populated area. They longed for a completely simple life, a life of small town. In Iowa, they saved money and moved back and opened their own bakery. In 1947, the Hansons returned to Iowa with their now 10-year-old son and their 2-year-old daughter that they settled in Pocahontas. Was one of many towns created during rapid settlement of the flat, fertile Midwest Corn Belt after the Civil War. The town was named after that famous Virginian Indian princess whose benevolence and interventions on behalf of Jamestown settlers in 1600s had made her the symbol of American Indian welcoming Europeans into New World. The basic ethnic mix of the town and its surrounding farms was established by Germans, Bohemians, Scandinavian, and Irish immigrants. Lots of immigrants. Robert's dad was one of them. Pocahontas epitomized the wholesome small town of Americana of mid-20th century America, a lifestyle portrayed in shows like Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best. Pocahontas had a town grain elevator. The railroad came through town. It had a cute little main street hotel and a blacksmith, machinery, car dealers, groceries, produce stores, hardware, and repair shops. It had a 9-hole golf course and a 60-by-120-foot swimming pool built by Works Progress Administration during the Depression. On the main street, there was also Rialto Theater, showing the latest Hollywood movies. Showbiz! And then, in 1949, Pocahontas got a donut shop. The October 20, 1949 edition of Pocahontas Record Democrat carried an ad for Robert's parents' new bakery. Mr. and Mrs. Chris Hansen announced the opening of their home bakery, inviting people to come in and get acquainted and inspect the modern bakery and enjoy free coffee and donuts. Chris Hansen had learned the baking trade in his native Denmark, home of the Danish. Sweet as bread with some cream or maybe some cheese or maybe some fruit complete in the middle. Before immigrating to the US at the age of 20, Danis, masters of the pastry. If you had to pick up one nation to buy tasty as bread from, Denmark is not a bad choice, followed closely by North Korea. Origin of the apple fritter. You ever had North Korean apple fritter? You haven't lived in a constant fear and poverty and sadness unless you have had a stale, moldy North Korean apple fritter. That's the first nourishment of any kind you have allowed to eat in days. But seriously, Chris Hansen was a skilled baker, and his bakery on the main street of a small town in Iowa thrived. Also, this Chris Hansen, not the same Chris Hansen of To Catch a Predator, same name, different era. When they first moved to Pocahontas, the Hansen family lived in a small apartment above the family bakery. And at 2 a.m., the Hansons would walk downstairs and work would begin. The bakery did well enough to allow the Hansons to buy a modest 3-bedroom house, just 2 or 3 houses from the edge of the town, putting a whole 4 blocks between their workplace and their new home. This commute to work changed Hanson family life dramatically. Chris worked himself and his family hard, especially his son Robert. Robert started working around the bakery shortly after the family opened it, and his responsibilities and hours steadily increased as he grew older and older. Getting up to work for several hours before you go to school probably not gonna enhance anyone's junior high or high school scholastic experience. Robert would later express resentment over how hard he worked as a kid, saying, "When I was young, I worked at my dad's shop and I would maybe get 35 to 45 cents a day. When I got to be a sophomore, junior and senior, I wouldn't even get a dollar a day. That would work out to about 10 bucks a day now when adjusted for inflation. So he really did have a reason to gripe about it. In addition to being angry over feeling like he had too much work to do as a kid and that he wasn't paid enough for that work, Robert Hansen also had severe stutter, which added further frustration to his childhood. He would stutter his whole life and he'd feel that his stuttering was part of the reason that girls he was interested in weren't very interested in him. He stuttered so badly in junior high school and high school, he tried to talk to a teacher or a classmate and literally not able to get out any words out of his mouth that made sense. He'd end up just walking away, midway, stuttered, humiliated. And of course, this being the 1950s, when bully shaming wasn't something anyone really talked about, he was ruthlessly mocked. He also wasn't a really big dude, and I imagine he pushed around in the hall more than a few times. Books slapped out of his hands and then kicked down the hall. Tripped, all that fun stuff. Also, once he got into high school, he developed horrible acne to make life just a little bit sweeter. He had acne that would leave his face severely scarred for the rest of his life. In later years, he would recall his face as being one big pimple. Boys and girls alike made fun of Robert for his stutter and his acne, but it stung more when the girls made fun of him. And he came to hate all the cruel pretty girls he coveted but could not have. Hello, future killing motif. Ding, ding, ding. Hansen was an average to below average student. It's possible he could have gotten much better grades if he just didn't have to work such long hours in bakery. Just a possibility. One of the Robert's high school teacher noticed he always seemed tired in her afternoon typing class, often falling asleep. She figured out it was because he had to get up too early to work in his father's bakery. For Robert, school would haunt him. He had no real friends and was described as a loner. He'd later say that his school was hell and that all through high school, if I knew there was a possibility that I would have to say anything in class or make comment, I would literally break out in sweats. And of course, getting excited made stuttering worse, he said. Hansen went out for basketball all 4 years of high school but failed to win a letter each year. Same thing with football. Outside of school and working in the bakery, when Robert did have free time, he would go out in woods and daydream about rape and murder. Actually, not kidding here, he did start to fantasize about raping and hurting all the girls who made fun of him pretty early. Started dividing women in his mind into good girls and bad girls. Bad girls who made fun of him should be punished. Bad girls who weren't sexually interested in him should be punished. He also hunted, fished, and became pretty good at archery. Great. Not a good combo for some woman he would meet on later. I imagine he also started fantasizing about hunting those bad girls. Robert loved being out in woods, out alone in nature. He was good with gun and bow. He was powerful. He wasn't riding the basketball or football bench. No one was making fun of his acne. No one was making fun of his stutter. In May 1957, Hansen graduated with 31 other students. And his tiny high school's yearbook got his name wrong. Robert's name was spelled as Hansson with an O. Jesus, how insulting! Under his misspelled name was the slogan, Worry never made men great, so why should I worry? Robert joined the Army Reserves in 1957 after graduation. He did his basic training at Fort Dix in New Jersey, where he became proficient as a marksman. He then went to Fort Knox, Kentucky. He served for just 1 year before being discharged. Actually, some sources say he was discharged. Others say he was completed his active duty after a year, then was on reserve duty status for several years after that. I'm guessing in Army, Robert's drill sergeant may have mocked him as well. You know, it's common. I don't know that to be true, but I have heard many a drill sergeant, especially back in time when Robert was young, were quite fond of aggressively breaking men down through verbal abuse before hopefully building them back up. Before living his brief active duty stint in the military, Robert had his first sexual encounter with a prostitute. And I'm gonna say that was his first sexual encounter with any woman. And then he had many more encounters with prostitutes. Encounters that rarely left him satisfied. He was frustrated with how quickly the encounter was over. He'd say it was just bam bam, thank you ma'am. He wanted more time with this woman. This poor sick bastard wanted them to want him. In 1958, after leaving the army, Robert would return to Iowa and work in his dad's bakery. So again, crushing it. Moving back home after a year on his own, few months later, he gets his own apartment in Pocahontas. And according to someone who would be interviewed years later, he would have high school boys over to his apartment to talk about guns, hunting, and who or what he didn't like in Pocahontas. In 1959, Robert started dating a woman who is mentioned in all kind of biographies but isn't named in any articles about Robert online or in the two biographies, the two that seem the most comprehensive that I brought about this dirtbag. In one of the sources, she's referred to as girl who had graduated a year after he did, the daughter of town's chiropractor. Yeah, that's about it. This same source said that this chiropractor and his family, quote, had little contact with the community outside of his practice, unquote. December 7, 1960, Robert burns down his old high school's school bus garage. Clearly still angry about his high school, clearly harboring some grudges as retribution for the abuse once he received. Robert talks a 16-year-old employee at his father's bakery to help him set fire to the school bus garage. Not only do they successfully burn it to the ground, they also destroy 3 of the 7 school buses. Unfortunately for Robert, his accomplice turns himself in and rats Robert out. On March 29, 1961, Robert Hansen is charged with arson. His bail is set at $2,500. 3 days later, his mother Edna went to courthouse and bailed him out. And then, that same evening, Robert marries chiropractor's daughter in a ceremony at Lutheran Church. The newlyweds left for a week in Florida for a honeymoon, then returned to live in Robert's apartment while he awaited trial. Man, that's fun wedding! Getting married in front of your new in-laws who now knows their daughter is getting hitched to a vengeful arsonist. They must have thrilled. And stress and anxiety made Robert stutter worse. Those words must have taken something to watch. And just imagine, it's like, I do. That September, Hansen was indicted for arson charge. Considering the case against him, Hansen waived his right to trial and pled guilty. He would later say, quote, "I guess I burned down the bus barn because I hated the school with divine passion. I would do whatever I could think of to get back at that monster school that did Bob Hansen a personal wrong," unquote. Yep, clearly had not moved on from high school in a way. Robert never moved on. He had desperately wanted to make some of those girls pay for the rest of his life. On October 9, 1961, Robert was sentenced to 3 years at State Reformatory, Anamosa. Okay, actually it is a reformatory at Mimosa, now known as Mimosa State Penitentiary. Shortly afterwards, his first wife divorced him in Mimosa, home of National Motorcycle Museum, by the way, which looks like pretty awesome actually. A psychiatrist diagnosed Hansen as having, quote-unquote, an infantile personality. Based on Robert's description of fantasies of revenge and destruction, Hansen revealed he imagined doing vicious things to girls who would reject him or made fun of him. He talked about wanting to blow up town water tower and shoot out lights of the town police car. He was obsessed with the quote-unquote getting even. In late 1962, another psychiatric assessment done on Hansen stated that while he still had an infantile personality, his antisocial attitudes had diminished. This report, coupled with his record of good conduct, earned him an early parole on May Day 1963. The winter before Hansen was released, his parents had closed their successful bakery in Pocahontas and left town. The shame of everyone knowing that their son was a town arsonist was too much for them. They purchased a Stony Point resort on Leech Lake, 200 miles from north of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and moved up to northern Minnesota to get everything ready for the coming fish season. The Hansen's resort was located in Chippewa National Forest on Peninsula on southwest side of big whopping 110,000 acre lake. When Robert was released from Mimosa, he took his parole in Minnesota and went to work at his parents' resort. Spending the first weeks helping paint the boats and cabins and putting out the docks. When the season began, he guided fishing parties. He loved it. I'm sure shit was a little bit tense between him and his parents, but he liked his new wilderness environment. In summer of 63, he also met the woman whom he would become his, make his second wife, Gloria Deacon. She was one of the girls his folks had hired to clean the cabins. She also came from Iowa. Her parents ran a motel in Pocahontas. Gloria went back to Iowa University that fall while Robert completed a 3.5-week short course at Wilton School of Cake Decorating in Chicago. Soon after that, Robert got a job at bakery in Minot, North Dakota, through a friend of his parents. He and Gloria got married same month later. And then Robert got into some kind of trouble at his new job and came back to work at his parents' resort once again. The troubled son returns. Based on what kind of trouble he'll get in soon, I'm gonna guess and say that Robert got fired in Minot for stealing something. Robert loved stealing stuff, almost as much as he loved raping, killing, and setting things on fire. Shortly after returning home, Hansen got another job at big bakery chain Cox Bakeries, and the couple moved to Moorhead, Minnesota. This chain doesn't seem to exist anymore, but there is a Cork's Bakery and Donuts in El Paso. Robert was supposed to rotate among the bakery chain's 32 shops scattered throughout the Midwest, filling in for regular managers while they took their vacations. His first assignment was two-week stint in Rapid City, South Dakota. When he got back slanging so many darn hits and maple bars in Rapid City, when he got stuffing Rapid City to gills with muffins and pumpkin bread, he and Gloria decided they didn't like Robert having to travel so much for work, and so they moved to Minneapolis. Robert was done with Cox. Robert and Gloria lived at Collins Trailer Park on East 78th Street in suburban of Bloomington. Gloria attended the University of Minnesota and Robert worked at Meyer Bakery in Uptown Minneapolis on West 5th. Robert was hired by Meyer to be a foreman and cake decorator, and his new boss found him to be excellent worker. The people of Meyer also discovered he quite had a temper. Apparently, he would go off on people working under his supervision all the time. But he was always polite to his boss, so they kept him. So, 2 years later, on February 22, 1965, Robert got into some criminal trouble once again. A Bloomington policeman arrested Hansen for stealing some fish line and lures worth $11 from a sporting goods store. He had the money, he just didn't want to pay for it. As it turned out, Robert had gotten really into shoplifting and he had been stealing shit for months. Gloria Hansen persuaded the couple's Lutheran pastor to watch for Bob, and these first shoplifting charges were dropped, but Robert wasn't done stealing, not even close. A couple months later, Robert's bakery boss came into shop early one day and found out that Robert had broken into his office by using knife on the lock. Hansen was rifling through a desk drawer where the cash for customer change was kept. This guy would later say he was obviously furious. He said, quote, "I called county attorney about pressing charges, but then Bob came to me and said he had been offered more money to work at Northside Bakery. That simplified things. I told him to go ahead and take the job," unquote. Sounds like maybe he had been wanting to get rid of Robert for a while, or maybe he enjoyed thinking about Bob stealing from a competitor. That may... Robert was once again arrested for theft, this time at Montgomery Ward store for stealing a soft ball. Jesus, what is with him? At his new job, he had actually started bragging to others, that is other employers, about how he could go into store and try on a suit and then walk out of the store wearing it. In spring of 1967, Gloria graduated from University of Minnesota, and she and Robert decided to leave Minnesota. They both loved the great outdoors, and she and Robert chose to move to the state with greatest amount of wilderness in US by far. They decided to move to Alaska. In June, the couple stuffed their belongings and a tent into New Pontiac and headed for the Pacific Northwest, hitting all kinds of campsites and national parks along the way. They stayed in Grand Teton National Park to take mountain climbing lessons. They spent time enjoying the beauty of Glacier National Park. They stayed in Grand Teton National Park to take mountain climbing lessons. They spent time enjoying the beauty of Glacier National Park. Glacier is beautiful, by the way. Holy shit, it is ever. Then they drove up to Canada, to Alaska, arriving in Anchorage in Midwest. Alaska would provide Robert with plenty of room to hunt. He'd end up hunting all kinds of animals in Alaska, including, of course, human beings. Alaska's 591,004 square mile area equals 1/3 of lower 48 states combined total land area. It's huge, and so full of land no one else is living on. Wilderness where you can walk for days and days and never run into another person. Plenty of room to take someone out into the wilderness and kill them. They can scream all they want. No one else is around for miles and miles and miles. Alaska's 1967 population was only 278,000 total people. To understand Alaska's population in proportion to its size, imagine Manhattan only having 11 people living on it. And most of Alaska's people lived in or around Anchorage. Anchorage is located in south central Alaska at northeastern end of Cook Inlet Basin, a 37,000 square mile area shaped in horseshoe by quint of mountain ranges. Anchorage is a relatively new city. Hansons had no trouble finding employment in booming Anchorage job market, hungry for people with a trade or degree. Robert went to work as a baker and cake decorator for the Safeway Bakery at 9th Campbell. And Gloria got a job on teaching government health. Life was good for Hansen in Alaska. They rented an apartment by Safeway, then soon moved to a better one on Dawson Street. After only a year of renting, the young couple was able to buy a duplex on 6th Avenue in South Mountain View, where they lived in one half and rented out the other. Mrs. Hansen became active in Lutheran Central Church, and she and Robert went hiking, camping, climbing, fishing together. Life was way better for Robert in Alaska than it had been in Pocahontas. I get it wrong every single time. Robert threw himself into archery and bow hunting and joined the Black Sheep Bowmen and the Alaska Archery Association. In 1969, Hansen got into Pope and Young record book twice, shooting a fourth-ranked mountain goat on Kenai Peninsula and bringing down a 33rd-ranked barren ground caribou. The Pope and Young Club, by the way, is an organization dedicated to bow hunting which continues today and includes its own world record book for North American game. In 1970, Robert bagged the third largest dall sheep taken down by a bow, and the heads of all these animals would line the fine walls of his den. And I feel like later, if he could have gotten away with it, he would have had the heads of various women mounted alongside them. Dude loved his trophies. Visual reminders of lives he had taken. In 1971, Robert and Gloria prepared for the arrival of the first child. They sold their duplex at a substantial profit and moved a few blocks north to a larger house on Thomas Circle. And Robert took a second job at another bakery, and then the Hansons had a baby girl. After the birth of this first child, Hansons began to go separate ways, no longer going on wilderness outings together. As a couple, they continued to participate in church and social functions, but their lives became more and more separate outside of that. This separation will soon give Robert more time to fulfill his darkest urges. Also, in 1971, Robert brought down the biggest doll sheep ever taken by bow, Hansen signed the Pope and Young Fairchase affidavit, wherein he swore no firearm was used. Hansen also bagged the second-ranked barren caribou that year. Oh my god, he's really good at hunting, but he would never enter his name into Pope and Young record book ever again. He kept hunting. But by the time of the winter of 1971 and 1972, he had changed his prey to women. In early 70s, Anchorage had extremely left-hander lawn district full of kinds of vice, largely run by Seattle mafia boss Frank Colariccio. It was centered on 4th Avenue, again where the city began, where this lots of had been sold in 1915 to be used for anything but sinful debauchery. And now that's about all they were used to. Young women flooded into area in hopes of making big money, dancing in full nude strip clubs that also operated as brothels. As the population and disposable income skyrocketed in Anchorage during Alaska's big oil boom, the bigger strip clubs were skimming off tens of thousands of dollars a month and more in cash. Which is why the mob got involved. Lots of cash money in 1974. Construction on the Trans-Alaska pipeline would begin, carrying oil roughly 800 miles from Portillo Bay at the top of Alaska to worlds east of Anchorage. There was an oil boom. With an oil boom comes a lot of blue-collar jobs paying lots of money. Young dudes making oil money and looking to blow it on coke, alcohol, strippers and prostitutes in wild party scene of Tenderloin district of Anchorage. And so, lots of prostitution flowed into to meet this demand. Some of these prostitutes would become Hansen's victims, and the fact that they often weren't from the area made it much harder for the investigators to solve these cases. When girls went missing, law enforcement had no idea if they had just returned to wherever they had happily lived before Alaska or if something terrible had happened to them. Also, as one might imagine, the seedy underbelly of Anchorage was also violent. The police were kept busy with plenty of beatings, armed robberies and even firebombs and more than a couple of murders. Between 1979 and 1983, the police responded to 270 times to disturbances at just Booby Trap Club alone. In this chaotic world, Robert Hansen found his new prey. He figured the police wouldn't spend a lot of time looking for it when they went missing. And sadly, he was right. In Anchorage's red light district, Robert soon realized could easily find women who, for an offer of $300 cash, would go anywhere with him. But first, more legal trouble. In November of 1971, Hansen gets arrested for an incident in Spinyard, neighborhood of Anchorage. On November 15th, exactly, 18-year-old Susie Hepburn was driving home to relax after work on a Monday afternoon. On Northern Lights Boulevard, she stopped at red light, and in a casual pan of her surroundings, her eyes met those of a man in car next to her. She gave reflex a smile. The light changed and she drove home to an apartment she shared with two roommates in Spinard section of Anchorage. And then she thought no more about the dude she'd smiled at. A man named Robert Hansen. Robert, however, thought a lot about her. Robert followed her to her apartment after she got home and started taking shower. There was a knock at the door. She answered it, and there stood 32-year-old Robert. Robert pretended he was trying to find someone in the apartment complex. He said, maybe could I see your phone book for a second? He asked. It was on the table by the door, and Susie let him look. After looking, Robert said, must be unlisted. And then he tried to start a conversation. He told the young woman he was new in Anchorage, didn't know many people, and if she would like to go out with him on a date. No thanks, Susie said, I'm engaged. And then Hansen left. His casual approach hadn't worked. He was pissed. She had rejected him just like all of those girls had rejected him in high school. He decided to try more aggressive approach the next week. The following Monday, Susie left her apartment at 5:15 a.m. to drive some friends to work. She dropped them off and then drove back home, where Robert waited for her in darkness. As her car's headlight beams swept across the yard, when she turned into driveway, Susie saw a man in orange cap hurry behind the neighboring building. She parked her car in a carport and got out. Suddenly, the man in orange cap stepped in front of her and pointed gun in her face. It was, of course, Robert. He snarled, "Shut up, sweetheart, or I'll blow your brains out." And Susie indistinctively screamed. Robert cocked the revolver and said, "Scream again and I'll blow your head off." Stuttering. And that's when another Susan Scott, who was back in the bedroom ironing blouse, heard another scream outside. She hurried into living room, looked out the window, and saw a man standing with her roommate in the lighted area at the base of the stairway. She could see he was holding a gun, and she opened the door and yelled, "What's going on, Susie? Are you all right?" When she didn't reply, she closed the door and called police. Robert got nervous now, walked away from Susie and wandered off down street. Moments later, cops arrived and they found him wandering around the neighborhood a little over an hour later. Hansen's vehicle was then located and a loaded 22 caliber pistol was found under the driver's seat. Another officer found his orange cap in the snow and a .357 Magnum revolver nearby. The cap, revolver, and some of his hair was sent to crime lab for testing. Susie positively identified Robert and then grand jury charged Hansen with assault with a deadly weapon. His trial was set for January of 1972. While awaiting this trial, he was arrested again. This time, Hansen was accused of having picked up 18-year-old prostitute named Barbara Fields outside a bar in downtown Anchorage, kidnapping her and then raping her at gunpoint. He was accused of tying a Barbara up and then driving her 80 miles away to an empty field out on the Canale Peninsula. He made her strip naked, fondled her for about 15 minutes like she was on a date with him as opposed to being held against her will, then had her get dressed again, drove her to motel, called the Sunrise Inn, took her in a room, tied her to bed and raped her. Then he drove her back to Anchorage, told her he'd kill her baby and her parents if she ever ratted him to police. And then he let her go. And then she went to police, and unfortunately the district attorney ended up being forced to drop this case when Barbara became scared to testify and failed to appear in court. Superior Court Judge James Fitzgerald then sentenced Hansen to 5 years of drawing the gun on the first woman, basing this punishment on a psychiatric evaluation that revealed that Hansen was still obsessed with revenge. Robert was obsessed with revenge. Revenge on any woman who reminded him of girls who made fun of him in Pocahontas. Revenge against women who rejected him anyway. He wanted to hurt them. He wanted to kill them. Judge Fitzgerald could see that Hansen was dangerous. However, Hansen was still able to get out of the jail quickly despite objections from the prosecutor due to another more forgiving psych eval. He immediately applied for parole and got it quickly, only staying in jail for 3 months from March to June. In June of 1972, Hansen was assigned to halfway house upon his release when he received psychiatric treatment until November. In December, he was let out of the halfway house on work for law program. In the confession he gave to his investigators, he stated that the very first night he was free, he went down to 4th Avenue in Anchorage and started cruising the area, watching the prostitutes and fantasizing about how he would capture one of them again. The very first night he's free, this is what he does. Again, he's obsessed. Also that December, a petite blonde 18-year-old Anchorage resident Celia Beth Van Zanten, a freshman at Anchorage Community College, goes missing on December 22nd. 3 days later, on Christmas, her partially nude, frozen body is found in Raven, 20 miles south of Anchorage. Her hands had been tied behind her back. Robert would never confess to murder but is strongly suspected of having killed her. A map would be found after his eventual serial killing arrest with X's on the map. Many of the X's would be revealed to be the locations of known Hansen's murder victims. There was an X where Celia's body was found, and while all this was going on, Robert is still happily married. His wife Gloria stays with him despite the recent very strong kidnapping and rape allegations, and despite the recent conviction for assault, which was obviously a rape attempt. Despite newspaper coverage on the recent charges against Robert, the conviction and the rape accusation, there was a preliminary trial for the rape allegation. Robert didn't seem to suffer much of a status drop in Anchorage community. Co-worker Irma Knight would later recall saying, "We took it with a grain of salt because Bob was a hard worker, the best cake decorator, and he had that little girl, so we figured out he had a good marriage." In the summer of 1973, Hansen, in all likelihood, killed again, and his wife and daughter headed back to Minnesota to spend summer with his wife's parents. And while Gloria is chilling in the land of 10,000 lakes, on July 7, 1973, a 17-year-old girl named Megan Emmerich disappears from Anchorage. Hansen would never confess to murder her but is still considered the prime suspect. Then in late 73, Hansen has an encounter with the Seward police where he was still on parole for assault. They found a stolen motorboat and a depth finder with serial numbers filed off. Aboard the Christie M, a boat Hansen owned, Hansen contended that he had brought the stolen goods through private sales but had lost receipts. And then he passed a lie detector test and wasn't charged. Consequently, with no record of bad behavior or misconduct during his general furlough, he was paroled in 1973 December. In 1974, Hansen in all likelihood raped a 16-year-old girl in Anchorage, but the crime wasn't reported. 10 years after the assault, this victim would tell her story to Sheila Toomey, who was writing a series of articles about the hidden victims of violent crimes. In the Anchorage Daily News, in the June 12, 1984 story, this victim was given pseudonym Layla. Layla said that on the brisk of September night, she was walking home to Gamble Street after party. As she crossed the street, Hansen, waiting in a parking lot with a car, rolled down his window and asked if she wanted a ride. Though she didn't usually hitchhike, the man was soft-spoken and polite. He didn't seem threatening. She accepted. He sort of looked like a perfect dog, Layla told Tommy. "I thought he was dead." At her house, Robert Hansen wouldn't let her out of the car and pulled a gun when she tried to resist. As they drove away, Layla remembered Hansen getting very talkative, asking about her boyfriend, did she sleep with him, how many boys had she slept with. She said, "I had a feeling he had done this kind of things before." Hansen made her take off everything except her blouse, and then he forced her to perform oral sex on him while he held the gun to her head. Next, and this is so strange, he made her flash a passing motorist. This guy just loves flirting with getting caught. So reckless. something Hansen did this just to further humiliate her. He had been humiliated by pretty girls in high school, and now he's making this pretty high school girl humiliate herself. After several hours of sexually assaulting young Leila, Hansen drove around trying to find, as he told her, another girl to make us do things. He didn't find anyone. Then he drove around aimlessly for a long while, Leila said. I thought he was trying to decide what to do with me. And then he did something else, super odd, very unexpected. Robert Hansen handed Leila the gun and said, "Okay, Nav, you can do whatever you want with me, or you can order me to drive you to police station." What the fuck? Did he want her to kill him? "I had the gun in my hand," Leila told Tumsi. "I could have shot the bastard, but I thought it was a trap. That gun wasn't even loaded. I think that's what I would think too. He was tricking her, or is this kind of for the humiliation? Did he want her to find out the gun wasn't even loaded? Did her want her to know that he was just done with her, what he had been doing to her, even though she could have just run away when he first pointed the unloaded gun on her?" And then Hansen let her go, threatening, "If you go to police, I'll hunt you down." The terrified Leila responded, "Just let me live, I'll never tell." And she didn't tell for many years. On July 5th, 1975, 23-year-old Mary Kay Tell disappears from Seward. Seward is 126 miles south of Anchorage, another suspected Hansen victim. Till's husband was away from home, working up at Prudhoe in New Oil Field of North Slope. Finding out his wife was missing, he returned home to put up $1,000 reward for any information as to Mary's whereabouts or disappearance. It went unclaimed. Hansen later admitted he was in Seward the day Till disappeared, but denied any involvement in her case. Nevertheless, police believed she was one of his victims. Also, in 1975, another prostitute complained about Hansen to Rape Crisis Center, and the center reported the assault to the police, but Hansen was lucky again because this victim also refused to cooperate with law enforcement. She was a school teacher who had traveled to Alaska to work at a strip club to make extra cash that summer, and she didn't want the publicity of rape trial. She claimed Hansen drove her to foothills of Chukwa State Park, raped her at gunpoint, and then let her go. Hansen wasn't charged, even though officers at the time were convinced he was guilty. They just didn't have enough of case. Also, in 1975, as a teamster, Robert Hansen took a second job as laborer on the loading deck at Alaska Cold Storage, and Hansen had another baby. This time, it was son, whose name also appears to be half hidden. They were also saving to buy a larger home. Dude is crushing it. Building his family, making tons of money, killing and raping whomever he wants to kill and rape, despite doing financially well. Robert is still stealing lots of shit too. And Robert's kleptomania will come back to bite him real soon. In July of 1976, Robert and Gloria put a $37,000 down payment on an $88,000 house on an old Harbor Avenue in Mulsanne. Hansen's parents came to visit in September and see their son's new home. How proud they must have been, the rapey, murdering little fire starter. And then Robert went back to prison, of all the things, stealing a chainsaw from Fred Mayer's. Kinda get rape charge to stick to this fuck, but he almost ends up in prison for 5 years for stealing a chainsaw. Robert would later say when he shoplifted, he had come close to ejaculating in his pants, said it gave him same sexual satisfaction he got with a prostitute, more about the chainsaw arrest. Now, on November 3rd, the day after election in 1976, when Jimmy Carter won the race for the presidency against incumbent Gerald Ford, Anson walked into Fred Meyer's store at the intersection of Northern Lights Boulevard and the New Seward Highway. Security guard Jesse G. Smith watched the shopper act suspicious in the sporting goods section. At the chainsaw display, the man's birthmarked face turned one way and then the other as he examined the saw. It appeared to Smith that the fellow was looking to see if anyone was watching him. Smith watched Hansen to take chainsaw to a closed checkout lane and out of the store. He pursued and apprehended Robert Hansen 80 yards from the entrance. A week later, Hansen was indicted for a felony larceny in a building. The district attorney could have prosecuted the offense as shoplifting misdemeanor but sought a felony charge because Hansen's previous convictions. At arraignment, Hansen pleaded not guilty and was released on $500 bail. Hansen took immediate steps to prepare for a psychological defense. He went to see psychologist Dr. Alan Parker, the same man who had examined him when he had been charged with assault back in 1972. Parker's evaluation back in 1972 would help him get off the jail early. Parker's findings now will not help this case. After administering a series of tests, Parker wrote the following evaluation, quote, "Emotional and personality testing indicate a marked disturbed man who is somewhat antisocial, paranoid by nature, and with relatively weak ego. These are indications of severe heterosexual conflict, both with a desire for women and fear that he will not be able to relate to them. He is capable of acting out impulses and is aware of many impulses within his personality. He has a great deal of free-floating anxiety." Unquote. Since Parker had also done an analysis on Hansen in 1972, he was now able to also do a longitudinal analysis of Hansen. He wrote, the retesting indicates the presence of disintegration of personality to a highly potential psychotic level of schizophrenic scale, high maniac scale, and high antisocial scale. There's some narcissism and magical thinking involved in this also, he said. On January 19th of 77, before Judge James K. Singleton, Hansen pleaded guilty to theft on chainsaw, and then the judge chose to wait to sentence Hansen, deciding to wait on the results of additional psychological tests. And on March 22, 1977, another psychiatrist, Dr. McManon, testified he had been diagnosed Hansen as suffering from bipolar affective disorder, a variant of maniac depressive disorder. The doctor distinguished Robert's affliction from classic maniac depressive pattern by the absence of any serious depressive episodes. Hansen's impulses, he said, were poorly controlled during his mood and energy upswings, in which he would develop an abnormal preoccupation with single activity. Dr. McManon said his kleptomania was a manifestation of this monomania, and his determination as a trophy hunter was a socially acceptable example of his monomaniac behavior, where he would be looking to do things no one else had done in order to consume his energy. McManon also said that after his third session with Hansen, it is evident to him that Robert's antisocial behavior urges were escalating, so he prescribed Taurazine to put an immediate check on those impulses. McManon described Taurazine as tranquilizer, and then the doctor switched Robert to lithium, stating it allowed him to function normally while learning how to control his antisocial behavior. If only that would have been true, Judge Singleton sentenced Hansen to 5 years in prison. But then, just 2 days after his sentencing, Hansen's attorney filed a notice of appeal and his appeal was successful. And on August 11, 1978, the Supreme Court of Alaska decided to be lenient with Robert, ruling, "The record before us reveals us a man suffering from clearly diagnosed mental illness that until recently offered little hope of recovery. Hansen's psychiatrist prescribed a course of drug treatment and therapy and reported to the sentencing court that Hansen had been cooperative and had a positive attitude towards the treatment. The court expressed optimism about doctor treatment, and Dr. McManor was giving his patient and considering Hansen's stable home and work environment. Their decision concluded that he be probation for the remainder of his 5 years and released him confinement immediately. And then, just a few weeks after his release from prison, Robert Hansen murdered a woman at Summit Lake on Kenya Peninsula. She was the first of at least 17 women he would kill between that fall of 1978 and his arrest in 1983. This wouldn't end Robert's massacre of women. This is just the part one of the story, and next week we would be discussing more about Robert Hansen's story and how he got away for his crime for one whole decade long. So until then, keep listening to Crime with K, and remember, always listen to Crime with K but not and pop up on my podcast as next episode.